Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome to the Daily Jungle, a tremendous Friday, clones. What's up? The Dodgers punched their ticket to a World Series for the first time in 29 years. The Raiders win an absolutely crazy Thursday night game, and you clones celebrated the one-week anniversary of Jeff in San Antonio's historic crying call, a call which I gave him a golden ticket for, only to rip it back from him today. And on top of all of that, we had three guests. Mike Hilton of the Pittsburgh Steelers, NFL legend Takeo Spikes, and Arizona State quarterback Manny Wilkins. All of that, and Alvy's week that was, even on a busted-up lapper. Alvy, let's see what you got. Alvin, if you can, and I know your board is completely jacked up, but if you can you hit me with the autumn wind? No, wait. Can you give me some I Love L.A.? Can you? Better yet, Alvin, can you play them both? Can you play them both? And then, Alvin, on top of that, can you bump whatever it is the Clippers play when they win? Can you do that? Can you hook me up? Can you bump whatever the hell the Clippers play when they win? I guess that's that. That's it. Man, I love that song. The Dodgers are making their first trip to the World Series in nearly three decades. The Raiders pulled off an insane win, and Lonzo Ball made his debut for the LA Lakers. In other words, Dodgers, Raiders, Lakers, Clippers. Has Cali given you enough to talk about? Where to start? Let's start with the LA Dodgers. The Dodgers did not back into the World Series. They kicked that door down. No, they gassed up a bulldozer and they flattened the whole freaking house. And they got to work early last night. Chris Taylor led off the game with a 9-pitch walk. And let me stop right there and tell you about Taylor. This guy is a stud. He's violent with a bat in his hand. You can put him anywhere in the infield or the outfield, and he looks like a gold glover. He runs extremely well. He's got an uncanny knack for always doing the right thing at the right time. What I'm saying is, this dude is a player. And the Seattle Mariners had him and didn't know it. And that's about the most Mariner thing ever. The Dodgers are lucky to have this guy, and the Mariners were stupid to let him go. Anyway, I digress. He starts the game off the way he always does. Then Justin Turner strikes out. And then Cody Bellinger came to the plate.
Here's the pitch to Bellinger. Line drive, base hit into the right field corner. Taylor rounding second. He's on his way to third. Bellinger's on his way to second base. Taylor's on his way home. Throw to the plate is not in time. And arriving at third base is Bellinger. And the Dodgers take a 1-0 lead.
1-0 Dodgers. But then in the second, Kike Hernandez shows up, and the Kike Hernandez show started up.
Hernandez, 2-for-8 in the postseason with a fly ball to center field. That's well hit. Almora going back to the wall. He leaps, and it's gone. A home run. Kike Hernandez, a home run. And the Dodgers take a 2-0 lead.
Enrique Javier Hernandez, if you need him, 2-0 Dodgers. Then in the top of the third, a really bad night for the Cubs got a whole hell of a lot worse. And who was right in the middle of it? Taylor and Hernandez again. Taylor led off the inning with a ground rule double. He scored on Turner's single, then Bellinger singled, then Puig singled, then Kike Hernandez went Kike Hernandez yet again.
And a high fly ball to right center field. That one is well hit. That one's on its way and gone. A grand slam home run for Kike Hernandez, taking a page out of the James Loney songbook. Oh, doctor! The Dodgers now lead it 7-0.
That's two for him. Two
for me.
Two home runs, that is, and 5 runs batted in the first 3 innings, and a 7-0 lead for the Dodgers. Good night now. Thanks for coming. Cubs fans were streaming for the exits. The defending champs were done. The series was done. Except it wasn't, because the Dodgers were not done, and neither was Kike. Fast forward to the top of the 9th inning. One man on.
Montgomery delivers. There's a fly ball to center field. It's on its way, and it is gone! A home run! Kike Hernandez, a two-run shot. It is 11-1. He is never going to have a night like this again.
By God, Kike, stop. These Cubs pitchers have families. Have mercy. But the Dodgers didn't have any, and they haven't had any since that postseason started. 7-1 in the postseason. They've outscored their competition by nearly 30 runs in only 8 games. And a Cubs season that started with them hosting the Dodgers in Wrigley as they got their rings ended with the Dodgers soaking Wrigley in champagne. To be the champs, you have to beat the champs. And the Dodgers smashed the champs. Absolutely wrecked them. That was a beatdown and a hospital job of the highest order. From top to bottom, the Dodgers outplayed, outhit, outmanaged, outsmarted, and outclassed the Cubs. Look, doesn't mean that the Cubs are done or that their dynasty is over. Baseball dynasties are funny that way. Check with the late 90s Yankees. But it does mean that the Cubs have some work to do and some questions to answer before next season. The Dodgers, on the other hand, have got one big question this morning. How do you get the sting of champagne out of your eyes? Because those dudes were going hard in the clubhouse. And well, they should. Puig took a break from the celebration to finally explain why he licks his bat. Puig, quote, "I make love to the bat and he pays me back with hits," end quote. You do, Yasiel. You do, and he has, and it works. So many heroes for the Dodgers over the course of the season and in the postseason, from Bellinger to Turner to Taylor to Hernandez to Kenley Jansen. Clayton Kershaw taking the ball last night. Like I said before that game, there was nothing that guy would want to do more than to get them back to the World Series. And he did that. And he'll get the ball back for game one of the World Series here in LA on Tuesday. The storyline does not get any better. Now, what do you have to say for yourselves, Dodger haters? Yeah, I know. They haven't done jack. They got to the World Series, but they haven't won it. Yeah, great. And then what are you going to say when they do? Scoreboard. You look up at it and give them the respect that they've earned. They've been a buzzsaw in the postseason, and they made a mess of the Cubs last night. 1-800-636-8686. SoCal, LA, Dodger fan, it is a long, long time coming. There are still 4 wins away. They still need to finish, but they're there for the first time in decades. We're joined right now by Mike Hilton. Mike, it is good to have you on. How are you?
Thanks, Jim. I'm doing here. Good. How about yourself?
Mike, I'm great. It's great to talk to you. All right, so you had dropped a tough game, Mike, to Jacksonville, and then you go on the road and you beat Kansas City in their house. First off, how pleased were you with the way the defense and the entire team showed up and responded to that challenge?
We were very pleased by how we played. We still had a lot of stuff to work on, but coming off that tough loss against Jacksonville, we knew we had to pick it up against a team like Kansas City, and we were able to do that in all 3 phases.
You know, Mike, I think a lot of Steelers fans, of course, know your story, but not every football fan does. Your journey to this spot is incredible. You were undrafted out of college. You signed with Jacksonville. That didn't quite work out. Then you signed with the Patriots, and that didn't quite work out. So you're in the middle of last season. You don't have a team at that point. What were you thinking about your football future then?
It was tough at first, because I knew the road that it would take for me to get back on the team. I didn't start working out. You know, I kept preparing myself, just waiting for a call to come. And around mid-December, I got that call from Pittsburgh, and here I am now.
All right, so I'm going to ask you about that call in a minute. The truth is, you never gave up on the dream. You never stopped working. But it's great to pursue a dream, but you got to make money, right? At some point,
yeah. You
applied for a job at Foot Locker. So what was going through your mind when you filled out that application?
Oh, at that point, it was just, like you said, you know, I got to have some money in my pocket, got to be able to take care of myself. That Foot Locker deal was what I was really leaning towards before Pittsburgh called in. You know, everything's been working out for me here.
It is. One last thought about that Foot Locker thing. Then you get a call, and the story goes that they were going to offer you a job as a sales rep. How did you go about handling that phone call?
When they called me and told me I got a job, it was a couple hours after I got signed to the practice squad here in Pittsburgh. But, you know, I politely told them I had a better job offer. You know, I didn't go into detail, but they understood, and you know, I'm blessed to be in the position I am.
Mike Hilton joining us. So when you keep that belief, Mike, and you keep on grinding, and then you get that phone call, and you know you've got that shot, how do you go about approaching the opportunity once you finally get it?
you just got to be confident. You can't go out there doubting yourself, you know, whether you were on a team or not on a team like I was. You just got to be confident in your ability, and when you get the chance to go out and show that you're able to make plays, you got to do that.
And you're doing that. Now, one of the reasons why teams may have overlooked you is the fact that you're not the tallest guy around. I know you've heard that plenty of times from lots of teams. Like, we like you. There's so much we like about you, but, and that but was always your size. What was your reaction when you used to hear that from teams? What did you think?
At some point, I got used to it. I kind of knew what to expect. I knew talent-wise I'd be able to go out there and compete with pretty much anybody. You know, I feel like I was a playmaker and a guy that could help a team. But, you know, of course, it's known as a big man's game. So I didn't let it bother me. I use it as a chip on my shoulder, and it's been working well for me.
Steelers DB Mike Hilton joins us. Now, Mike, this here is a big Ike Taylor house. And he was at training camp. He saw you working. He was saying the other day that some scouts were saying that you were too small. And Ike said, quote, "You got to call an ace. The boy plays football. He's very aware. He's very gritty. He's very aggressive," end quote. And they talked about how big you play and how you can sniff out plays. So finally, how good does it feel to prove the doubters wrong?
It feels good, man. Going through what I've gone through my rookie year, it was tough. You know, it was tough on me mentally also. But just going out and showing that a lot of teams missed on a guy like me, it feels good. And, you know, I'm happy where I'm at and ready to keep this season rolling.
All right, so now you have an opportunity. You're playing in a town that's got so much tradition. You're playing on a defense that's got so much history, and you're in a secondary that has all the above. What's it mean to you to play in that town, in that secondary?
It's great, man. You can't beat a sports town like Pittsburgh. You know, they love all their sports, baseball, hockey, football. It's just a great city. And to play in the secondary with guys like Joe Hayden and Mike Mitchell, guys, and William Gay that I can learn underneath and take their coaching points to further my game, it's a great opportunity, and I don't waste it.
You know, I wonder, Mike, when you go through what you've gone through, what would you tell somebody who's in a situation where they're chasing a dream and they really believe in themselves, but they're concerned that they might not get the opportunity, that they're getting a lot of rejections? What would you tell them?
You just got to be confident and believe. Of course, you're going to have some negative thoughts come through your mind, but you just got to trust that one day that call or that opportunity is going to come, and you get that opportunity, you got to run with it, and just don't look back.
Thing is, to me, it's like you make it seem like this is all just kind of normal and this is what you expected. I mean, we're talking about you applying to Foot Locker, maybe not being sure about the future, to playing a significant role on a team that has Super Bowl aspirations. And to me, it sounds like you're just kind of playing it off like, yeah, it's good. I got this, which I think you do. But I got to know, what's the last year of your life been like?
The last year, it's been great, man. Ever since I've been here, you know, a lot of things been looking up for me, especially just in the football, on the football side. You know, I'm on a Super Bowl contending team, one of the better defenses, and I'm contributing well to help us win. And I feel like it was a perfect opportunity for me.
Raiders 31, Chiefs 30. I had to repeat that because I'm still not sure what I saw. Did any of that really happen last night? Did Marshawn Lynch really get ejected from that game? Did Amari Cooper really finish with 11 receptions for 210 yards? Did Jared Cook make an incredible leaping catch for a touchdown with 18 seconds left, only to have it be ruled down at the one?
Third down and 10 off right. Derek looks left. Derek going to throw for the end zone. Caught! It is caught! Touchdown! Raiders! Jared Cook! Right His butt hits right there, Tom.
That's right. You're
He's right.
right
there. He's on the 1 yard line. This is not a touchdown yet.
Raiders radio. Buttocks. No, he didn't get in. He did not get in. But did Michael Crabtree follow up that catch and then with a touchdown pass, only for that to be taken away for an offensive PI? So after Cook didn't get in, Crabtree did, only to have that ripped for an offensive PI. I mean, did that really happen?
Hudson will snap. There you go. They're going to run a play. They've run a fade route. Caught! Michael Crabtree!
Oh, they're going to put
penalty flag.
Offensive pass interference. They're going to wave it off. They may pick this up.
No, didn't look
like much. Here's Rolstad with the whole game.
Pass interference. Offense. Number 15. It's a 10-yard penalty. Replay.
It's not a 10-second runoff because it was a dead ball.
Uh-oh! And did Cook then drop a pass after making that incredible reception? Did he then drop a pass on the final play from scrimmage, only though for the Chiefs to commit a defensive holding to extend the game?
One shot for the end zone. Derek back, looks right, steps up, throws middle. It's incomplete. A flag is down. This will be holding. A holding foul on the Chiefs. It'll be a 5-yard. We'll get one more on time play here. Game's not over.
Prior to the pass, holding. Defense, number 38. By rule, the game will be extended for one down.
I can't take any more of this.
Extended again. And did Kansas City really commit a second defensive holding play on the very next play to extend that game? There's no way that happened again, right?
Here's Derek Carr looking left. Derek Carr going to lob one for the end zone. Juggling a flag down. Came down again. They're going to get a hold on the Chiefs. They're going to go half the distance again from there. He was trying to hit Patterson.
Holding. Defense, number 21.
Murray again.
He's half the distance from the goal. Another untimed down.
How the hell did all that happen? How did that keep happening? And then after all of that, did Carr really hit Crabtree in the end zone to tie it at 30?
Crabtree and Roberts go left. Amari right, one-on-one. Derek going to roll left. Derek throws for the end zone, and it is called for a touchdown by Michael Crabtree. The Raiders, and I think this time it counts.
There are no flags.
Knees and down, in play, in the end zone. Give it to me loud now. Touchdown! Raiders!
And then after all of that, did Giorgio Tavecchio come out to win the game with the extra point? Honestly, the only thing that would have made sense would have been for him to shank it and send it into OT. But he didn't. He won it. And the Raiders may very well have saved their season. A macho performance. They snap a 4-game losing streak. They come through on a short week against a very good Kansas City team that has dominated them for years. And honestly, that ending might not have even been the weirdest part of the game, because back in the second quarter, Marshawn Lynch was booted from the game for coming off the bench onto the field to jump into a fight, and he shoved a ref. All of that somehow happened.
What are they doing here? Alan Bailey stands him up, and now they bury him down. They're going to get a personal foul on Dee Ford as the Chiefs are trying to hurt Derek Carr. Marcus Peters slammed into him, and now we got a little bit of a pushing and shoving. The Raiders are unhappy as Marcus Peters. Now another flag comes in.
Hey, I'm just going to let you guys know Marshawn Lynch ran in from the sidelines. If they find it. That's going to throw him.
He went at his guy, Marcus Peters.
They'll kick him out of the game.
I think there's going to be multiple penalties here. And
let's see if so here's the question. Why did Marshawn Lynch run onto the field? Who was he trying to get to? Who was he trying to defend? Why was he on the field? It's a great question. I mean, was he out there to defend his quarterback, Derek Carr, from Marcus Peters, which would make some sense? But then again, Donald Penn and Kelechi Osemele were already doing that. Or was he out there to defend Peters, his cousin, from Penn and Osemele? That would also make sense. Afterwards, the Raiders themselves didn't even seem to know the answer. Carr said, quote, Marshawn came out and did his thing.
Marshawn came out, did his thing. Obviously, you never want a guy to get kicked out. You know, that stinks. But I know just from knowing him, I know that he was out there just taking care of us.
All right. So was he out there taking care of us, or was he out there to protect his guy, his cousin? Penn said, quote, I ran over there and got Peters off of him because the refs weren't doing their job of protecting my quarterback when he's on the ground. I saw Marshawn come out there. That's his cousin. Chris Long did that thing to his brother a couple of years ago. Marshawn wasn't doing anything. He was just trying to protect his cousin, get his cousin to the sideline. They're real close. They're more like brothers than cousins. They're real close. All right, so on the one hand, I would say that if Marshawn was out on the field protecting his cousin and not his quarterback, they may have a problem in that locker room. But if you listen to Penn, that does not sound like the case at all. I mean, that's the Marshawn we know and love, right? The truth is, we may never know what he was doing on the field.
I just know that he should not have been on the field. I mean, no matter how much you care about your quarterback or your cousin, or your quarterback and your cousin, you can't run on the field like that, and you definitely cannot put your hands on an official the way he did. That's going to get you ejected and a fine. But the only thing crazier than the incident is what happened next. There had been reports that Marshawn left the stadium, but that's not true. He changed, and he went to sit in the stands and watch the game. Yeah, I said that. He was photographed in the stands with the fans watching the game. And the only thing better than Marshawn getting tossed and heading up to the stands is Marshawn getting tossed, heading up to the stands, and then taking the train home. No, wait, he did that too. According to TMZ, he not only took Bart home, he did it with Marcus Peters. And there was a great chant of bleep the Chiefs on that same train.
The Chiefs! The Chiefs! The Chiefs! The Chiefs! The Chiefs!
He's on the train with a chief, and there's that chant going with him right there. I mean, I can't believe any of that happened. From the two game-winning touchdowns that weren't, to the two holding calls that were, to the touchdown that was to Marshawn's ejection, to Marshawn sitting in the stands, to Marshawn being on the train, and the chants of bleep the Chiefs. Bleep the Chiefs. I want to believe all that happened. I want to believe it's all real, but it can't be, right? As for Marshawn, I'll say this. He's lucky they did win. I mean, maybe they forgive and forget him running onto the field to defend the opposition and not his quarterback, if in fact that's what he did. But getting ejected for making contact with a ref and losing because they didn't have their power back to give the ball to on the goal line at the end of the game would have been much tougher to forgive and forget. Luckily, he and they don't have to worry about that. They won. They got over. I'm not saying that they saved their season with that win. I'm saying their season would have been over if they didn't win. And Chiefs fan, what do you know? You don't have the best team ever. Back-to-back losses. Crazy NFL season. But nothing was crazier than the end of that game. For Marshawn being on Bart with Peters and the fans chanting, bleep the Chiefs. Tequila Spikes. All right, so last night, Tequila, the book tour for Behind the Mask, it's underway now. Last night, you were in New York City. Behind the Mask book charity event is what it was called, and you were there with the legendary Harry Carson. Lay it out. How did that night go last night?
The night went well. Received so much support, Rome, from a lot of people who I thought was coming. Received a lot of support from guys who I didn't know was coming. Michael Strahan came and showed some love to us. We had a lot of former Giants in the building, Plaxico Burress, Antonio Pierce, Rohan Marley. He came through last night, Bob Marley's son. And it was a great turnout for a great cause. As you know, I'm going around on my tour event, teaming up with guys who are my distinguished guests in the book is Harry Carson. He was my distinguished guest. And what makes our event so unique, we go around and we find charitable partners to team up with. And our partner last night was a New York native, Tuton Reyes. He also played here for the Giants for a short period of time. And his charity, Beyond the Burrows, does a job of focusing on kids in this area, in the New York City area, as far as giving them an opportunity. Kids are willing to go to school, but they're not able just because of the finance aspect of it. And so what we came in and did last night, we teamed up with him, spread awareness about my book Behind the Mask, and we were fortunate enough collectively to give $10,000 to the Beyond the Burrows Scholarship Foundation.
Excellent. Well done. Tequila Spikes joining us. His book is called Behind the Mask. Now, Tequila, when you spend time with the likes of Chuck Bednarik, Mike Singletary, Harry Carson, Derek Brooks, what are those conversations like, and what are the things that they think about when they look back on their playing careers?
The conversations are priceless. I mean, it's and the reason why, Jim, is these guys, they give me their most intimate thoughts. And it's something that I realized before I came up with the concept of the book, that they're going to share with me their most intimate thoughts on how did they become great. And those conversations, I love to have them because it brings out just more awareness and let everybody know that it's so much more to us than just having the mask on. But when you go behind the mask, you find out, why is this guy motivated? You know, what makes him tick? What makes him want to be great?
T'Keal Spikes joining us. You know, T'Keal, one of the things that you talked about also seemed to be a common thread among all of these guys, and that's that they felt that they had a single defining moment. So let me turn that around and ask you, what was your defining moment? When did you know how special that you could be as a player?
My defining moment came, my father brought a videotape in when I was in the eighth grade. And the videotape was titled, How to Be a Champion. And, you know, we talked about a few minutes ago, everybody is willing, but everybody is not able. And I was a willing young kid at the time. And when he brought this videotape home, Lou Holtz produced it. And it talked about having your daily must and setting up a blueprint, a plan for you to be able to succeed with having goals. And so once I saw that tape, my father gave it to me. It was easy after that because from that point on, I knew what I wanted to be. And so when I started writing down my goals and I taped them up on the wall, it was the first thing I saw when I woke up in the morning, and it was the last thing I saw before I went to bed. And for me, it was the accountability factor that came along with it that held me accountable because I knew, Rome, you can ask me a question, I can lie to you. I can lie to my mother. I can lie to my father. But at the end of the day, by me having that simple piece of paper on the wall with my goals and my daily must, I knew I could not lie to myself. Because at the end of the day, that's something that I would have to lay down with. And so it was a challenge for me every day when I laid down. Did you do everything you were supposed to do in order to attain greatness? And that's what really drove me. It changed my whole perspective. And to this day now, I still write down goals.
T'Keal Spikes joining us. He played 15 years in the NFL. He was the 13th pick overall in 1998. He is the author of the book Behind the Mask. T'Keal, when you watch the game today, are there guys who remind you of the way you played? If so, who are they?
Luke Kuechly. He is one of my favorites. I love Sean Lee. He is just straight reckless abandon. Bobby Wagner, he is another guy that, you know, when I look at overall game and understanding the pulse, Bobby Wagner really brings a lot to the table. Of course, Navarro Bowman, you know, he was one of the guys who I tutored him when he first came to San Francisco. And so it's a lot of great talent out there. Even a guy who I love, just from a splash play. He has a big impact on the game, Ryan Shazier. You know, he can go through a game and you probably won't hear much about it, but at any given time, he will come up with a freakish athletic play, and those are the plays that get you paid in this game.
T'Keal, let me ask something before I let you go. I've known you a long time. You've always kind of worked your plan. You always thought about things. You always had this great discipline, this great purpose. And even a project like this shows that you were thinking about what you would do once your playing days were over. Not everybody is prepared when the game ends, and it can be hard and it can be lonely. One of the things that you do is you check in on guys once they've played and they become former players just to see how they're doing. What's the thinking behind those check-ins, and then how do guys respond to you when you make that call or you check on them?
The responses are great, and I urge any former players who are listening right now, or anybody, you don't even have to play the game of football, any sports, but it's always good to check in with people who you haven't heard because you never do know what they're going through. And that's one of the things that I found out by going out just giving checks to some guys who I haven't talked to in a while because everybody is going through something. But I think if you can just take a little time and not be selfish and just say, you know what, I just called to just see how you're doing and how can I help you. You will be surprised how much we help each other. And just having the conversation, I know I've had guys tell me, Spikes, I really appreciate you calling to check up on me because now I was going through this and you gave me a resource to be able to direct me in the right position. And for me, that's what it's all about, being able to develop these relationships and not only develop but cultivate the relationships.
We go to San Antonio. Jeff in San Antonio, a week later. My man, Jeff, how you feeling? How are things?
Man, things are great, Rome. It's funny to be on the inside because I would be a fool to have not realized what the clones were going to do to me given that circumstance. But I do have your back, Rome, and you're my quarterback, man. And as soon as I got off the call, I did some sit-ups in the driveway. But there just were no cameras around, so there's no real proof this time. But in light of recent events, I wanted to let people know that the rumors of my demise have greatly exaggerated. I carry the smack hammer heavy, and I'm coming for all the legends. Vic and No Call, his little heroin addiction that he tries to play off with calls to your show, done. Jeff in Richmond needs to make a comeback. And Jeff bumping around on a car phone in Phoenix? Who cares about that guy? Him and Jeff in SoCal are probably the same dude anyway. So I'm going to be in the lab. I'm going to be in a local gym here in San Antonio. And I'm not going to be turning around and seeing what we all know nobody wants to see. So war me winning the smack off next year. And war Rome as always. I'm out.
All right, Jeff. Here's my reaction. Number one, that did not make it better. I'm sure that made it worse. And number two, as much as this hurts me to do it, it's going to hurt you even more. You're not invited to the Smack Off any longer. Manny Wilkins. Manny, good to have you on the program. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jim. How about yourself?
Good. Manny, I'm great. Really nice to have you on. Listen, I know that you're already getting ready for Utah tomorrow, but for a moment, Manny, let's go back to last Saturday. What did it feel like when you beat number 5 Washington, which was the highest-ranked team the school has beaten in more than 2 decades?
Yeah, I mean, it was awesome to be a part of something so special, and just to have that moment for our team and have that moment for our fan base was truly amazing.
I'll tell you what, you sound really calm right now. You looked really calm during that game, which I'll get to in a minute, but you had a 13-0 lead late in the game. Washington scored to make it 13-7. You get the ball back with more than 5 minutes left. You drive into their territory. You've got a 4th-and-3 from the 37. Under 2 minutes to go, you drop back to pass. You get hit, and you still manage to complete it for a 30-yard game to ice the game. It was an amazing moment. Can you take me through the play? What happened, and then what were you feeling when you knew that you had won that game with that play?
Honestly, it was a spacing concept, and, you know, we had they covered down really well, and, you know, we threw a go on the outside, you know, because it's a stick concept, basically, and throw a go on the outside. Corner's eyes were looking at me and didn't see the ball, and CJ caught the ball, ran down there, and it was special just because, you know, at that time, then, you know, the game's over, and you see a team with the defeat in their eyes, and, you know, to go against such a well-coached and well-disciplined team, and to get that win was truly remarkable.
Arizona State quarterback Manny Wilkins joining us. You know, as I mentioned, that's the highest-ranked team your school has beaten in more than 2 decades. Yet what struck me about that game is you guys did not seem surprised when you won. In fact, it seemed like you expected it. What did you and your teammates know about each other going into that game that made you feel like you were going to win that game?
Well, what we did the past, you know, 2 weeks, because we had a bye, we just told ourselves every day is just expect to win. And we prepare at a championship level. And, you know, it's a testament to how our coaches are, you know, helping us grow as players and helping us grow as people, is just learning how to prepare the right way. And it paid off here in the end.
Now, I mentioned that you always seem so calm during the game. Is it true that you sing when you're on the field? And if so, what songs do you sing?
Yeah, you know, I have some moments where when I'm on the sideline and stuff like that, or TV timeouts and stuff, I just kind of just have those moments to myself to relax and chill out. And, you know, I'm a big bro, PX, Party Next Door. I sing a bunch of his songs, and, you know, kind of just gets me in my little rhythm, gets me in my mood. So big shout out to Party.
I like it. Manny Wilkins joining us. Manny, listen, one of the reasons I want to talk to you is not just because of who you are as a player, but who you are as a person and what you've come through. You and your father were very, very close. And when you were 10 years old, he passed away. How would you describe the bond that the two of you had?
You know, obviously it's a father-son bond. And, you know, he was in prison for half my life until I was probably 6 years old. Then he got out. And when I turned 10, he passed away. But those years that, you know, he was out and there for me, he was always there and went to all my football games, basketball games, any sporting event I had. And, you know, I would go stay with him on Fridays, you know, because my parents were divorced. You know, it was special to have that bond. And, you know, those are bonds that you can never get back. You know, a father-son bond is something that's truly special. But, you know, I learned a lot from him, and it's helped me grow into who I am today.
You know, it's such a tragic thing and such a difficult thing and such an unbelievably challenging thing. After your father passed away, you moved around for the next few years, and you lived in multiple different states.
You had a variety of living circumstances. What was that time like, and then how did that impact your academics?
I mean, it was rough. I kind of bounced around from school to school, and, you know, there's never a moment where I was able to truly get all the way comfortable with, you know, a group of people. You know, I don't have friends that I with since I was 2 years old, like a lot of people have. You know, I kind of built relationships with people all across the country. And, you know, I think the hardest part about it was is not being around family all the time and not having a set foundation. You know, I had my mom and my sister, and it was just us. And then till I got to high school and I moved in with my uncle and aunt after I got in some trouble, you know, that was kind of the last, you know, your last straw. And I was able to, with the help of the people that I had around me in the community, is kind of turn my life around and kind of just lock in and get it done.
Manny Wilkins joining us. You know, you talk about going to Northern California and you moved in with your uncle and your aunt and you got into a little bit of trouble, but you had a good support group around you. I think maybe you simplified it a little bit, or maybe you didn't. Like you said, I locked in, I got it done. Fact of the matter is, your grades weren't where they needed to be, but then you got an opportunity both in the classroom and on the football field, and you did get it done. How did you manage all of that and then turn that whole thing around the way you did?
I think the biggest learning point that I had growing up, especially the huge maturing point of high school, was just learning to take things that I would use as an excuse or use as negativity and turn it into something positive. You know, learn to battle through adversity and not give up on certain situations, because at the end of the day, you're going to get in what you're going to get out of it, what you put in. So I just learned to put my head down, go to work, trust my training, trust the people around me. Just have faith and do what God's put me here to do.
Arizona State quarterback Manny Wilkins, my guest. So, Manny, what about Arizona State? What was it about Arizona State that made it feel like that was the right place for you?
You know, school-wise, I think it was an amazing opportunity for me to have the chance to get a degree from here. And, you know, I love the coaching staff. I love the people that I was around. And ultimately, one of the biggest parts about it was the relationships that I was able to build before I even got on campus. So, no, I think that was a huge part, and I've gone through a couple offensive coordinators, but I'm glad who I've had the chance to land with now, and you know I'm looking forward to what we can do here in the near future.
And you got another great opportunity coming up on Saturday against Utah as a leader on the team. Then, how do you go about helping your teammates put a huge win behind you, and then get ready to play against Utah tomorrow when you know especially Utah is going to provide a really physical matchup?
Definitely. I mean, you know, I like to tell everybody that in the Pac-12, it's any given Saturday, anybody could beat anybody. It's just about who wants it more. You know, I think that's how our league is set up, is everybody has players, everybody has coaches, and it's just about, you know, on that given day, who comes out and who wants it more and who's going to go out there and work the hardest. And, you know, I think from my teammate standpoint, we just got to realize to look at the bigger picture and take it game by game. And, you know, you win the rest of these football games, you're going to be playing here on, you know, December the 2nd or December the 5th when the Pac-12 championship comes around. So our goals are in front of us, and we just got to continue to keep our head down and just go to work and stay humble and stay poised in all these situations.
Hey, Manny, can I ask you before you go? I think you're really unique. I think you're very, very different. I don't know too many people of your age who have gone through what you've gone through and persevered and somehow come out the other side as well as you have. I mean, sports are not sports. If somebody listening right now is going through a really challenging time and maybe losing faith and not sure what to do, what's your advice for them?
You know, trust in God's plan. You know, I think everybody has a purpose in life. You know, everybody is going to go through things, go through hardships, go through adversity. And I think those obstacles get put in front of you in order for you to grow from those and be able to teach others as well, regardless of what's going on in your life at the time. You know, I think everybody has an opportunity to prevail. It's just about how your outlook is and how your mindset is. And, you know, throughout life, you just have to continue to have a growth mindset and always be able to be a student of life and never have a closed mind.
off a big New York City turnaround.
Happy belated birthday from your friend Toby in Houston.
A tremendous Monday to you. What's going on? Welcome to the program. Crazy, crazy weekend in the NFL. You know, generally by the sixth week of the NFL season, you should have a pretty good idea of who's good, who's bad, who matters, and who ought to just give up right now. But not this year. The only thing that you can know is that every week, somebody's going to get injured. There's no sugarcoating this one. Seeing Aaron Rodgers go down and out with that broken collarbone is terrible. You see one big name after another go down. Better put Tom Brady in bubble wrap and only break him out for the games.
Email.
Looks like the NFL has hit the bottom of the well when it comes to finding quality starters this season. Signed Baby Jessica. Stand down, Kooks.
A three-run walk-off home run for Justin.
What the hell was John Lackey doing in that game? What was John Lackey doing in that game? And one more bonus question. Where was Wade Davis?
Rolling, leave Lackey alone. Bastards are lucky he even came in to pitch for you.
Scott Brooks.
I was reluctant to do it. I didn't feel like doing it, but I'm glad I did it. Give the NBA TV just, I mean, they are so good and on point on everything they do, and I love it.
This one gal, hardcore Patriot fan. In a crowded airport, out loud in a bar, and 100% unapologetic. Like, mind your own business. What are you looking at? It's a turn and burn mission, and it's awesome. I absolutely love it. However, there's a couple of dots that I'm trying to connect. Did I or did I not see Brock Osweiler get into an NFL game last night?
Osweiler fakes the
like,
kick.
I think I did.
What?
The jungle is going to television. Finally, after all this time, we're going to televise this program. This show is going to be televised live 3 hours a day from a new studio on CBS Sports Network, and that's going to start on January 2nd. Clone, sincerely, all joking aside, thank you for everything. I love you. I would not have any of this without you. Hell yes. Of course this simulcast TV show is about you clones. The power of the clone nation.
My buddy's name is Jim Rowe.
Dino Babers.
Jim, I was with you at the beginning at 6:90 a.m., okay? So I'm with you from day one all the way to the end, brother. And that's what we're looking for inside our La Familia, our family, our Ohana.
Jim Priory needs to know that Joe Crowder Check Mark.
Alvin, that sounded to me like a double manual buzzer. Is that what that was? Exactly. The studio. Time to die. You just have to get to January 2nd. And it will die.
I die every day.
A couple of months.
Gordon Hayward landed awkwardly. We have Celtics with their hands
goes
on their
to show
head.
How fragile and how fleeting this whole thing is. I guarantee Gordon Hayward did everything he possibly could to get himself ready for this critical season.
Everybody
and 5 minutes into the season, the whole thing gets blown up. Ryan in Maine.
I physically could not get out of bed this morning, and therefore I had to call out of work. And I don't know if I'm making it the rest of the week, Jim.
Hey, Ryan, you legitimately didn't go to work after you saw that? I mean, did that hit you that hard?
No doubt in my mind, Jim.
Johnny Gomes is my guest. Say what, man, they got a special place in hell for people like that.
Yeah, that's exactly right, man. I'm, you know, some freaking jack wagon wants to walk into the house like it's a fake firefighter and just start taking TVs. So it'll go back to them, though. Those are the people that get hit by a bus, so they can suck on it.
1-1000.
Dude, 2-1000.
Step your game 3 up. Mississippi.
That's
4
it.
Mississippi. Oh, no, Phil Collins! 5 minutes later, we got some Phil Collins.
Period.
He is Jeff Passan.
It's about the smack. It's not about the people he knows. It's not about the lengths to which he's willing to go. It's about the words. It's always been about the words. It's always going to be about the words.
Twitter. That same judging got you third place, Jeff. Suck it up.
I just love that there's real time. It's just fun being a part of this match.
I'm going to come visit you, and we're going to go to lunch, and we're going to get some dimples put in our chins, okay?
Bro, was that your attempt at saying that we're going to get plastic surgery? Jarrell Casey is my guest. So what's it mean to represent Paulie, and how much pride do you take in that program?
Oh, man, it means everything. You know, I love SC. SC was everything for me, but number one to me is being at Long Beach Poly.
I wanted to let people know that the rumors of my demise are greatly exaggerated. I carry the smack hammer heavy, and I'm coming for all the legends.
As much as this hurts me to do it, it's going to hurt you even more. Jeff, my man. Damn.
The guy's obviously going through some stuff. He's got a daughter on the way. He's about to get married soon. You need to cut the guy a break.
Like, you really believe that, right?
Give the guy some slack.
All right, you know what? Now that you put it that way, listen.
Take his golden ticket back. Hey, Jeff, cry about that. Rip it good.
Tequila Spikes.
We have a good run going on. I remember the very first time we talked.
I'm not done.
Nothing inspirational I could possibly say.
Tristan. I will let Sanchez host my show for a day if that happens.
Outro.
Judge a lantern. Trust the law.
War MPAN.
We're both still standing in the 15th round. How about that?
Bazinga.
Buffalo Bills.
On the bye week.
There it is. January 2nd.
Good night now.
That's fun. Good job, Alvin. Very well done. Thanks for checking in and listening to our Daily Jungle and to the Jim Rome podcast. Another one drops on Tuesday. You have yourselves an amazing weekend and check right back here Monday for more Daily Jungle. I will see you then.